Welcome to On the Way, where we walk through scripture in episodes that are short enough that you can listen to them on the way to your destination, and deep enough to help you on the way to becoming who God created you to be. We are being sanctified. We've not yet reached perfection. We are not yet in heaven, but we are on the way. So welcome to week 2, episode 2 of the podcast. Today we're continuing through the book of Titus. We're picking up in Titus chapter 1, verses 5 through 16. And last week we talked about the island of Crete. It's a terribly sinful place, but the Apostle Paul was interested in investing in a network of churches there because he thought that its many harbors and central location made it an ideal place to serve as a church planting hub. The problem is that many of the leaders of the church in Crete had been corrupted by lawlessness, deception, and sexual corruption that was so pervasive on the island that it worked its way into the church. So the book of Titus is actually a letter of instructions that Paul gave to his disciple Titus about how to turn things around in the Cretan church. And Paul's first instructions for Titus was to appoint new leaders to the church. He gave some instructions about what to look for when looking for a church leader. We actually still do this today. Kingdom-minded pastors are always on the lookout for people who might be called to the ministry. We're always looking for church planters and other people who can serve in strategic roles to grow God's kingdom. In fact, our leaders in our denomination, they're called superintendents, our leaders teach us how to identify potential leaders in our congregations. They tell us to watch for certain personality types, for signs of a calling on someone's life, or for specific spiritual gifts. Then they teach us how to cast vision to those people and invite them into the ministry. Essentially, we extend the Great Commission to those people that we believe God has placed a calling for vocational ministry in their lives. You may remember the story of Eli and his disciple Samuel. And when we think of Samuel, we think of this mighty prophet. But before he was the prophet that we think of today, he was a young disciple of another prophet named Samuel. And there's a story in 1 Samuel 3 where Samuel hears the voice of God and he thinks that it is Eli. He thinks that it's Eli's voice. So he runs to Eli and asks him what he needs. But Eli says, "It wasn't me. I didn't call for you." And this happens 3 times until Eli finally realizes that Samuel must be hearing the voice of God, not the voice of Eli. Then 1 Samuel 3, 9 and 10 says, "So he said to Samuel, 'Go and lie down again. And if someone calls you again, say, Speak, Lord, your servant is listening.' So Samuel went back to bed, and the Lord came and called as before, 'Samuel, Samuel.' And Samuel replied, 'Speak, your servant is listening.'" This is what we're supposed to do as Christians. We're supposed to help people to recognize, to hear the voice of God, to recognize God's calling on their life. And that is what Paul is teaching Titus in this passage. So what did Paul tell Titus to look for when he's looking for Christian leaders, or what he calls elders? He says that they should be mature husbands. He said that they should be mature fathers whose way of life is totally different than the Cretan culture. They were to be countercultural. They are to be known for their integrity, known for their self-control, for their generosity, and that they should be good teachers who oppose false teaching. Then Paul said this about the ideal elder. He says, "He must enjoy having guests in his home, and he must love what is good." This instruction to me really stands out. Why do the church leaders need to be good hosts? Well, we have to remember that the churches in this time, and specifically in Crete, met in homes. This is a very practical instruction that he's giving. If you're going to lead a church in your home, you should probably be good at having people into your home. You should probably have a hospitable home. And so, since we don't usually do home churches anymore, some do, but not that often, I think that we can translate this instruction to our culture. So what does it look like to have a hospitable church? The church is where the place where we gather with the other believers. At our church, we use the phrase, welcome home. We say it all the time. That's because the average New Lifer, we call our church New Life, and the people that come here New Lifers, the average New Lifer lives more than 1,000 miles from where they were born. We're a very transient community. We're a place of people from all over the world and all over the country. And most people who came through our doors are searching for a home. Do you have any fridge friends? Those are the people that you're so close to that when they come over to your house, they don't feel the need to ask permission to grab something out of your refrigerator. They just do it. And we want a church of fridge friends, people who feel at home at our church. We always make sure that our facility communicates the fact that we love each other. When is your house the cleanest? When you expect visitors, and we expect visitors all the time. When are you the most hospitable? When you respect the people that are visiting your house. We expect and respect the people who visit our church all the time. And when they come into our church, our hope is that our posture, our environments, and our attitudes communicate love and grace to them. We think that that's why Paul told Titus that the leaders of the church should be hospitable people. Here's our church's mission statement. We say, we encourage people to come as they are and become who God created them to be. You see, the current leaders of the church there where Titus was ministering on the island of Crete, the current leaders were circumcised. They were Jews. And they were telling the non-Jewish Christians that they would have to follow the Jewish laws in order to become a Christian. So they're hospitable, but they're only hospitable to certain people. They were completely obsessed with Jewish myths and human commands. In other words, the laws that they were enforcing weren't the laws that God had given them to enforce. In fact, many of them weren't given by God at all. And over the years, oral traditions and rules had crept into the Jewish religious system, and it had become a way of separating from people rather than bringing people together. And they added to the rules that God had given them. And to make matters worse, their primary motivation for enforcing these rules was money. They found ways to exploit the laws in order to make money. And Titus was given the job of removing these leaders because their teachings were perverting the Christian gospel message. Can you think of anybody who does this today? Who is a leader who seems to use the Christian title for wrong reasons? Maybe they use it for power or for political popularity. They'll call themselves Christians if it gives them something, if it means that they can achieve some gain, maybe a financial gain even. In America, politicians can even get lots of votes by claiming to be a Christian, because there's a lot of people who associate at least with the Christian label in our country. A lot of musicians start off with a Christian label so that they can get some popularity, then they turn their back on Christians as quick as they can. And if it's for a missional purpose, I'm all for that. But if it's just for personal gain, not so much. You know how it goes, an athlete or an actor in their acceptance speech thanks God because they're trying to brand themselves as good guys, but they actually do almost nothing to actually follow Jesus, but this helps them out in their image at the time. And so these pastors and religious leaders and church leaders in Crete had been totally corrupted by money, and they had totally lost sight of their actual Christian mission just for personal gain, just for the pursuit of wealth. Then Paul did something that I think was absolutely brilliant. He quoted a Cretan poet, a guy named Epimenides, and he used this poem in order to make his point. It's similar to what Paul did on Mars Hill when he's talking to the Greeks and he tells them that their unknown God is Jesus Christ. So Epimenides, this guy that Paul quotes, is actually a Zeus worshiper. And he's the guy who fought the Cretan religious leaders who believed that Zeus was mortal, and he convinced them all that Zeus was immortal. So this guy was a total Zeus zealot. In fact, he said this about Cretans. "They fashioned a tomb for you, holy and high one. Cretans, always liars, evil beasts, idle bellies, but you are not dead," speaking of Zeus. "You live and abide forever, for in you we live and move and have our being." Does that sound familiar? If it does, that's because Paul quoted Epimenides. But Paul used Epimenides' words to talk about the Christian God. He's saying the Christian leaders may claim to be Christian, but their Christian way of, or their Cretan way of life denies Christ. If the church was going to heal, these leaders would have to be removed. I think we can learn a lot from the fact that Paul quoted a Zeus-worshipping poet. A lot of Christians today have gotten in the habit of boycotting anything that is wrong, boycotting anything that they say is sinful. But the command in John 17 to be in the world but not of the world reminds us not to separate from the world. Is it good to use secular movies and music to teach people about Jesus? We say absolutely yes. Paul did it repeatedly. But that requires Christians to be familiar with secular art. And it is the step toward that familiarity that so often rubs Christians the wrong way. When we familiarize ourselves with the people to which we've been called to witness and serve. So is it good for Christians to teach in secular schools? Is it good for Christians to be conversant in secular art? I think yes. Is it good for Christians to integrate their faith into their work? I think yes. As long as we live in this sinful world, we are called to be a part of the culture that we live in. It's time for Christians to stop boycotting. Christians built idols to cancel culture long before Twitter made it mainstream. We just called it boycotting. When I was young, we couldn't shop at Kmart or Target because a few of the items that they sold in their store, so we went out of our ways to shop at other stores. We routinely stood on street corners shouting about how much God hates abortion. Not too long ago, Christians were encouraged to boycott the Muppets because of a joke they told, or Starbucks because they use red cups, and PetSmart because they didn't say Merry Christmas. This list goes on and on and on. The goal of Christianity isn't to separate from the world. The goal is to shape and change and mold the world, to love the world. So that concludes the first chapter of the book of Titus. If you're getting together with a group to discuss this episode, we've included some discussion questions in the show notes. And if you have time, spend a few moments in prayer before your gathering. Ask God to use these passages to form you into the person that He created you to be. Thank you for joining me for this episode of On the Way. Next week, we're going to go through Titus chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. Here are the discussion questions for this episode. Number one, the Christian church is desperate for young Christian leaders who are called to vocational ministry. What can the church do to find or develop these leaders? Number two, when non-Christians think of Christians, the first words that come to mind are judgmental and hypocritical. Why do you think that is? And what can churches do to become more hospitable? Number three, without becoming too cynical of well-intentioned people, can you think of anyone who calls him or herself a Christian but does it just for personal gain? And how can we avoid that trap? Number four, why did Paul quote Epimenides, a worshiper of Zeus? And what can we learn from Paul's strategy? Number five, how do we keep from waging a culture war on lost people, aka culture, the same culture that we are called to lead? And how do we look past their sinful behavior to see the depraved people in need of a spiritual doctor?